I'd burn this city down to show you the light. By L'Autre BC. Read by On Verra. $24, a mud-caked pair of boots, and a name, Dean. That's what he wakes up with alongside the road, pebbles chipped off the asphalt digging into his arms, dust kicked up from the cars coating his jeans. Lone stretch of highway, identical in both directions, barren of signs. Just the wind whistling in his ear, a tune he doesn't understand, things he can't remember. He climbs to his feet, sets off a dull ache that feels like it penetrates down to the bone. Muscles not crying out, but definitely groaning their protest. Like whomever left him out here to wither in the heat from the road wanted to leave a longer-lasting goodbye than the one that's already fled his mind. He squints into the distance, futile hope that the landscape will transform into something less indistinguishable. It doesn't, so he walks. Deliberate strides that help him ignore the kinks and pops of stiff limbs and the constant reminder that he has less than nothing, not even himself. His hand closes around the air when he tries to bring it back, almost anything. That force that drives you on, puts you on a path. His gut, spinning wildly like a compass, no direction to lock onto, no destination to speak of. He sees the sun up ahead, on its descent, like him. He follows it, knowing he'll have to beat it somewhere or take worse odds with the frigid night. He wonders if he ever knew much, but for now, he knows his name is Dean. It's a start. The car that pulls up before the sun has a chance to get halfway under the horizon is a beast, gleaming black even in the fading light, long, powerful body like they hardly make anymore. Car like that isn't a car, it's a point. He bites down on his awe as the driver pulls her to a stop, face obscured by the last gasp of the sunlight bouncing off the broad windshield.
You need some help?
A lean face peers at him through the passenger side window, build of the rest of him more than filling the driver's seat. A car for its owner. It's a young guy, 20s, dark hair framing his face. The kind of ordinary, suburban-spawned guy you play football with in the park on the weekends or something. But then, looks are deceiving. Look at Dean. One would assume he'd have a clue as to why he was strewn by the highway with the roadkill.
Yeah,
he finally responds to the heavy eyes scanning his face. To be honest, I can't say what. Don't know who to call, don't know where to go. Don't really have any way to get there if I did. He rambles before catching himself. First chance he's had to get it off his chest. The guy doesn't seem put off. More amused than anything, corner of his mouth tugging up, sly.
I'm Sam, he offers. And I'm here, so I might as well do something, right?
Got a hotel for the night, and a second bed you're welcome to if you want.
Or there's the car, if you're hung up on the Shawshank possibility.
A huff escapes Dean's throat, despite himself.
To recap, you're going to either give me the opportunity to kill you in your sleep, or rip off your car?
Sam shrugs, leaning on the wheel.
I'll take my chances.
You saying you trust me?
Oh, wow, of course not.
Great, you'll be fine then, he says, like it's final. Get in. Reaching over and wrenching the door open, he looks up at Dean expectantly. Dean gazes down the road one more time, thinking that he may have gotten more than he'd bargained for when he asked the horizon for that favor. Since nothing about any of this makes sense, he pulls open the creaky door and slides in, not bothering to paste himself to the side furthest from Sam. Like he's taken this ride with him 1,000 times before. Maybe losing everything shook loose some of his common sense in the process.
One of the unresolved mysteries, your name?
Sam asks, glancing at him. Expression as placid as it had been the whole exchange.
Dean.
I knew a Dean. Good name. Down the street from the hotel, with Sam offering dinner, Dean realizes he's starving for a burger. Topped high with crispy bacon, slathered in mayo, surrounded by a greasy army of French fries. It's not much, but it's something of him coming back, and he chalks it up as a victory. Sam, in a mirror reflection, orders some lemon-grilled chicken platter and forgoes the more appetizing sides for a salad. Not nearly enough to fill that frame up, Dean thinks, but Sam seems content, opting to divide his time between ogling their waitress's ass whenever she refills their drinks, which is blatantly more often than necessary,
and studying Dean like a specimen under a microscope. It wouldn't be unnerving, even if there weren't a hole being eaten in Dean's stomach from who knows how long passed out by the road. Dean just looks back. Spacious as that Impala may be, the lingering stiffness throughout his body is demanding a real place to lay his head. Once they've paid the check, Sam's not so discreetly obtained the waitress's digits, and they drive the few minutes to the hotel. Dean's eyes are beginning to weigh him down. "Let me guess, you like the one by the door?" Sam tosses out, slinging a duffel bag onto the other bed. "How'd you know?" Dean questions, genuinely curious. "It's the one closest to the exit if I do go the Shawshank possibility, obviously," he finishes dryly. Sam, Dean has learned quickly enough, is one hell of an acquired taste. Brazen, and from what Dean has seen thus far, largely untroubled by the questionable things that occasionally come out of his mouth. Possibly unaware he's even doing it half the time. The rest, Dean wouldn't call it impulse, some lack of crucial mouth-to-brain filter. There's almost a deliberateness to it, a social battering ram that's served Sam well in keeping those he doesn't see fit at arm's length. Can't see it winning him many popularity contests, and he thinks that's probably the point. Doesn't stop Dean from laughing, though, sometimes out of amusement, sometimes out of mild disbelief, sometimes when he shouldn't. It seems to throw Sam a little every time Dean does. Dean doesn't waste time making good on his promise to aching muscles. He unlaces his boots, empties his pockets, and climbs into the bed nearest the door, head blessedly resting against the pillows. Sam doesn't stop rooting around the room like he has more than enough excess energy to stay up the whole night. Fucking turns on pay-per-view porn to glance at as he's typing at his laptop. But it's his world, and before long, Dean is out like a light, weariness catching up to him at long last. When Dean has to drag himself up to take a leak during the night, Sam's gone. The red letters of the clock say it's the dead of night. Dean pads to the window, moving the curtains back and surveying the parking lot through bleary eyes. The Impala is nearly out of his range of vision, but there she sits, illuminated by the street lamps, trunk popped. Sam digs around inside, but for what, Dean isn't able to see. After a moment, he slams it shut and quickly jumps in, engine rumbling to life. She's back on the road soon enough, vanishing from Dean's sight like a ghost into the night. Sam is back by dawn. Dean doesn't ask. Wouldn't get more than a smile and an enigmatic shrug anyway. The next day, Dean doesn't rejoin the world until mid-afternoon, a near sleep of the dead that somehow leaves him feeling more weak and battered than he had the night before. He wakes to the sight of Sam still seated at his laptop, already dressed, and at work on whatever it was he busied himself with. He couldn't have gotten more than a couple hours sleep after he got back, but you wouldn't know it to look at him. "Morning," Dean croaks. "Morning," Sam returns distractedly, gazing at him. "I'm out of practice, but sleeping 14 hours, Surgeon General recommends for those with possible head wounds or..." "You worried I was going to stop breathing in my sleep?" "No, I was up. I would have noticed," he muses, and Dean can't parse the straightforward seriousness from the joke. Thin line with Sam sometimes, so he just shakes his head. "I put a few more days on the room. Figured I'd give you some time for your..." He gestures around his head like Dean's a mental patient. "To clear up. Beats the side of the road." "Thanks, but you don't have to put yourself out any more than you have. I'm sure you got somewhere to be." As much as Dean is seeking answers, co-opting the time of someone that's been nothing but decent to him, with every reason to be otherwise, isn't what he's looking to do. "No one's waiting for me," Sam dismisses, and Dean can share the sentiment. "I've got business to take care of in the area anyway. And..." He picks up a stack of printed papers and drops them in front of Dean on the bed. "Since I had the time, I went ahead and checked missing persons in the area. No hits on a Dean or a male matching your description, but that could take a couple of days. Current editions are all there," he nods. Sifting through the first pages, Dean looks up, floored. "I'll take your word for it." Sam's face scrunches momentarily. "Why?" "Hanging with you is kind of one big leap of faith, right? Don't have my memories, so guess I have to rely on my gut putting me where I'm supposed to be." Maybe it's nauseatingly naive, but what else is there? It led him to Sam, at least. Sam, who he expects to promptly side-eye and mock him, but he doesn't. Just fixes Dean with a curious stare until his expression changes, idea forming.
"Drink with me," he states.
"What, here?" Dean looks around.
"Drinking alone in a hotel room if no one's getting laid is depressing, Dean," Sam informs him plainly. Critical fact of life, apparently.
"Oh. There's a bar about 10 minutes away, so get dressed. Get something in your stomach so you don't pass out after your first Cosmo, and let's go. You forgot plenty already. Might as well add to it tonight."
And it's just that simple for Sam. Shut everything off and do what you want.
Part of Dean, the part that's looking for the rest, could definitely use a chance to check out from reality. Choose to let go for a while, instead of having the option forced upon him. Who better than someone like Sam to forget with? No ties, either. No worries. Hell, who else?
"When was the last time you had any actual fun?"
"Fuck you," Dean laughs at the impossible question, throwing off the covers and rising from the bed. Thoughts of how he's going to beat some of the dirt out of his clothes, and whether he could borrow something from Sam that wouldn't make him look like his little brother, already beginning to make him forget what he's forgotten.
How is it that Dean fell in with an oddity of medical science? He isn't sure. Barely any sleep, eats half as much as him. But somehow, Sam's as upright as if he'd put back Dean's 2 long necks, instead of the half a bottle of tequila Dean can peer through on the table and see the nearby bathroom in liquid-distorted, piss-colored fashion.
Casual alcoholism. Requirement of the life. He raises his eyebrows before toasting Dean and knocking back another shot. Dean watches the liquid work its way down Sam's long, muscled throat.
"What life is that?"
"Right now," he sniffs, "I'm a collector. I work with my brother off and on." He adds the last part after a moment, like it had to force its way out.
"Actual signs of life. I'll be damned," Dean jokes.
"How's that work out? The family business?"
There's a shrug, and Dean gets the feeling it's not something Sam is ever interested in putting a microscope on, even to himself. Easier to keep on the move, so none of it ever catches up. No doubt, there will be things Dean will wish he could leave behind when he gets it all back.
"We used to be tight, practically in each other's pockets, but..." He does another shot, considering the words carefully because they don't come naturally.
"I guess I turned into someone else the last year or so. Not the guy he's looking for now. And he doesn't say it, but you can tell. Even I can tell. Just a matter of time until he bolts. Looking at my face and seeing somebody else makes him miserable."
"It's not my place." Hands out in peace, Dean goes on. "But maybe you ought to give him more credit than that. People change, but some things don't. Family doesn't."
"How would you know?"
"One of those things Sam does that most would read the wrong way. It's not an attack, not with that much earnest anticipation on his face.
Honest, I have no idea. But one guy's opinion? There are things that don't come off in the first rinse cycle. The guy you used to be, your brother's brother, it's instinct. In your gut instead of in your head.
Like when I came with you." He finishes, going quiet with the last bit. Sam is openly staring at him again. 2 days, and Dean hasn't faltered under that stare. Not once. Hanging around even though you got no practical reason to? Even though it doesn't make sense? That's instinct?
It's a lot of things. A lot of things that don't make sense.
Sounds familiar. He wraps the expanse of those hands around the bottle, pouring out a shot and pushing it across the table to Dean. Watches him take it down the way Dean had watched him before. When he goes to pull the glass back to top Dean off, their fingers brush, and neither is in a hurry to jerk theirs away, erase it with a bullshit joke that makes it safe.
"You guys doing okay? Can I get you anything else?"
Their fair-haired waitress decides to make a reappearance then, and Dean has to suppress a glare. It's all perfectly polite, and it's not like she snuck up on their table in this semi-crowded hole, but it yanks Dean out of the moment so quickly it gives him whiplash.
"No. In fact, I gotta take a leak."
Sam slides out of the booth with that, and it rings clear as a bell. What little way that window opened is irrelevant, because it's just been firmly shut. Dean blinks, unsure of where to go from here, what this means. He watches Sam go. No, we don't need anything. She tucks a lock of blonde hair so stark it's nearly silver behind her ear, lingering there. When Sam finally disappears into the bathroom, she takes his place in the booth, prompting Dean's brow to furrow in frustration. If she's trying to pick him up, now couldn't be a worse time, for a laundry list of reasons. "I've been meaning to talk to you all night," she starts, and Dean is already gearing up to let her down easy, eyes on the bathroom door. "But Sam, he's just glued to your side, isn't he? Even missing his mojo." His gaze snaps back to her. "You know Sam?" "I know a lot more than that," she assures, coy smile playing about her painted lips, bright, harsh red that bleeds into her pale skin. She reaches over and takes Dean's hand into hers, displaying a tattoo along her wrist of a white rabbit. "What do you think is going to become of you, staying with him? He's not to be trusted, Dean, and neither are you." The weakness in his body comes roaring back, as if a hole had been carved into his chest, and everything within started to flow out in a rushing stream. It has to be the drinks, something she did. His eyes flit to hers, wide and in pain as the sensation grows, pulling him down, making it impossible to speak. He starts to fall forward against the table, knocking over one of his empty beer bottles when it stops abruptly. Sam is standing next to the table, the waitress's tiny wrist locked in his grip, scorn etched into his expression. "Get your fucking hands off him." She struggles, glancing around. "I'll make a scene." "You say that like I care." The grimace on her face says he's tightening his grasp. "What's wrong? The triple-bagger old hag look not pulling in the pasties like it used to?" "Sam," Dean prompts him, table nearest theirs starting to take notice of the events unfolding. With a last squeeze, Sam relinquishes her arm, allowing her to stand up and adjust her sleeve like the whole thing had been a minor inconvenience. "I'll be seeing you again, boys. Count on it." Sam's eyes follow her until she disappears into the kitchen, jaw clenched tight. At Dean's questioning look, he only answers, "Something I'll take care of later. Fuck this place, let's get out of here." He offers Dean his hand, and the warm weight of it keeps Dean steady as he gets to his feet. On the walk back to the hotel, Dean isn't about to risk that Impala with alcohol in his system, 98% sure it'd be fine, not being good enough. Sam finally starts to show his liquor, disproving the working theory Dean had that he was something more than human. They end up sidetracked in a field awaiting development down the road from the bar, Sam arbitrarily deciding to take a seat on a discarded block of wood. Dean joins him and catches a glint in the side of his eye as he sits. There's a pistol tucked into Sam's waistband. Managed to miss that one. The waitress's words come filtering back, warring with the unwise ease he's carried in his stomach when it comes to Sam. The feeling that let him overlook the rest of it. "You're collecting. It involves pistol-whipping people?" "Oh, now you're listening to Psycho Bar Bitch? She tried to kill you." "Yeah, and I don't even know how, or why it stopped when you grabbed her, or what her vendetta against you is supposed to be. Not to mention why you've been packing heat this whole time, and conveniently neglected to mention it." He stands up and runs a cathartic hand over his face. "Fact is, I don't know you, and maybe I need a lot less going with my gut, because it's obviously fucked, and a lot more getting back to figuring out who the hell I am." He turns back to Sam to find him casually twirling his pistol with two fingers, out here in the open where anyone could see. It doesn't appear he paid half a mind to Dean's rant, or gives two shits that a cop could drive by and haul him in for brandishing a weapon. And that's it, isn't it? Sam's a crazy bastard that would be just as likely to play with his inexplicably owned weapon out in the open, sober, as he is drunk. And Dean, well, Dean's the amnesiac that got into his car, made himself vulnerable a million times over, and wanted more that instant their fingers brushed in the bar. They're both out of their minds. Hysterical laughter threatens to bubble up from his throat at the revelation, and he settles heavily back onto the log next to Sam, utterly oblivious to Dean's train of thought. At least, they're out of their minds together. "Think you'd remember what to do with this?" Sam is pondering the gun, turning it over in the moonlight. What? Dean raises his head tiredly, somewhat shocked he still has energy enough to do it.
If you knew how to use it before, do you think you'd remember how to do it now?
There's a sign for the real estate company selling the lot a few dozen yards away. Sam nods to it.
Here, he says, holding out the gun, handle first. See if you can hit it.
Regarding it with a skeptical glance, he declines.
No thanks. I think I'll be able to live without knowing if I was a crack shot in my past life.
Scared?
Dean scoffs. Of just firing a gun?
Of missing, Sam clarifies, eyes gleaming with the taunt, gun dangling teasingly from his forefingers.
Jeez, give me that!
He snatches it away, willfully ignoring the accompanying smirk of victory.
Fuck it, he mutters to himself, riding the pistol in his hand.
It's warm from Sam's grip, solid weight that seems to fit effortlessly into the mold of Dean's palm. He doesn't hesitate, doesn't want to think it over, force some sense memory he in all likelihood never actually possessed. Stepping next to Sam, he raises the pistol in his right hand, cocks the hammer, and stares straight down the barrel. The world shrinks down to his line of sight, lit path to the sign. He fires.
Nothing happens.
Ejecting the magazine, he pops it open, confused.
There aren't any bullets left.
It's empty.
Of course, any idiot can make one lucky shot. I just wanted to see how well you knew the weapon. Most people can't detach the magazine and check ammo off the top of their head. In case you were wondering, he finishes, droll, sliding the gun out of Dean's grasp.
Huh, guess you were right. Not everything falls through the cracks.
You're insane. Dean shoves the clip into Sam's chest. Even that small bit of contact makes his dick throb. Just being near Sam now, this heady mix of unpredictability and something deeper, but no less terrifying, setting him off. He steps into Sam's space, bold and undeniable the way Sam is, intent clear. Sam doesn't back away, lets out a liquor-tinged exhale that Dean's close enough to feel ghost over his cheek.
They're close. Too close for this to be anything else, for anyone to claim ignorance, or the booze made me do it, fuck you, don't get weird, man.
Sam is standing his ground, searching in his face, but the sudden shuddering of his expression gives Dean pause. Or maybe it's those huge hands coming down on his shoulders, stopping him in place.
You need sleep, Sam insists, awkwardly patting Dean on the back and stepping around him, heading off in the direction of the hotel.
For the second time tonight, Dean feels like he's been sucker-punched, too slow and lumbering to keep up with the rapid-fire changes around him. He's so fucking hard in his jeans, and pissed off, standing under a streetlight and wondering why, with the one thing in his life where the pieces all fit, it can't ever be easy.
Bobby, you there?
There's a rustling on the other line. Sam pulls the phone away from his ear to check that it's working.
Bobby?
Boy.
Sounding gruffer than usual, he grits.
If this ain't an emergency, you'd better invest in a watch. Do you have any idea what time it is?
I don't know, like 3, 4? He answers innocently. It's hard to keep track since I don't sleep.
Bobby sighs, giving up explaining how that one works to someone whose daily decision not to mow down slow pedestrians in the crosswalk is currently a work in progress.
What's the problem?
You know that banshee we were looking to bring to Crowley?
Yeah, Bobby responds slowly, knowing this isn't going anywhere that's going to let him get back to sleep in the next 60 seconds. The one that went from warning people about death to causing them?
Not so benevolent these days.
Well, trying to capture him to be dissected and tortured by a demon probably isn't putting any sunshine on their lemon drops either.
Oh yeah, Sam considers for all of 2 seconds before moving on. Well, turns out it was more like banshees. They got the drop on us in the woods, outside of the Boulder suburbs.
Everything shake out all right? I assume they're not giving you your one phone call.
The big stuff turned out fine.
What do you define as big stuff?
Nobody's dead or injured.
But?
But when the second one came out of the woodwork, Dean got blindsided,
I was busy with the first, and the other started to do her spirit-suck deal on him. Tried it on me, too, but I guess soulless spirits are like the burnt chip at the bottom of the bag, so I cut a chunk out of her and got free. By the time they both split, Dean was out. When he woke up, his memories were gone. In thought, Bobby scratches at his beard. Makes sense. Banshees don't take souls. It's more about life force, the essence. You tell Dean who he is? Not yet. You got him safe, though. He trusts me. Figures even that wouldn't bust you two up. He must know on some level that you're important. Enough not to run in the opposite direction, anyway. Bobby suppresses a yawn. Let it run its course. His spirit got uprooted. It just needs time to resettle. If he ain't back to normal in a few days, drop by, and we'll see about speeding up the process. Just be on the lookout for the Banshees. Got a lead, Sam reports. Several of the local frat houses are right along a set of woods, and one of the biggest is having a party tonight. Convenient location, gullible frat guys. It'll be a too-stupid-to-live smorgasbord. Not much argument there. Do your best to keep the wolves out of the cattle pen and keep me posted. And Sam? His life would be so much easier if he'd never got invested in those two. Watch your back out there on your own. Course. Bobby has the receiver halfway down when Sam's voice comes out of it once again. What's that? So, like this, Dean's pretty much... Dean, sans the memories, right? He wouldn't just up and do something he'd normally get all preachy about. He finishes in that one manner he has, blunt. This time, it comes off more like he's convincing himself. Wouldn't take much the state he's in now. Something happen? Suspicion creeps into Bobby's tone. Just hedging my bets. He ain't believing it for a second. Boy, between the two of you and the armpit time of the night, I am not up for a philosophical debate about what makes you you. Just keep him out of trouble until he gets his wits back, yeah? The click resounds in Sam's ear, and Bobby didn't help him at all. Well, crap. The next time Dean hears the familiar rumble of the returning Impala on the edge of morning, he's wide awake. Unable to keep himself under for consecutive hours this night or the last, spending empty time flicking through indistinct late-night programming and tossing the remote on the bed in frustration when one too many glances at Sam's empty bed sends him into the bathroom to whip his cock out and take the edge off, make him want to deck and fuck Sam a little less. The son of a bitch is everywhere, in his head, when he breathes in, touching him in every filthy image that flashes through Dean's brain as he jacks himself to brief reprieve. And what does Sam do? Keeps him at bay now more than ever, and have Dean contemplate if he's harboring delusions on top of the lapsed memories. The door stands open a moment before Sam appears. It would be the icing on the cake if he stumbled in attached at the face to some bar skank. Couldn't expect him to refrain for Dean's sake forever, right? Not like he's used to living alone, taking anyone else into consideration. The irrationally bitter taste blooms on his tongue, even though the words don't reach it. When Sam appears, it's tight-faced and alone. In the midst of stripping off his jacket to reveal a spreading bloodstain on his side, seeping through the fabric of his shirt. Dean is up in an instant. Jesus, what happened? I barely feel anything. Sam plays off, but the exhale he lets out as he navigates his way to his bed is strained and short. Just hand me some towels and my duffel so I can clean it up before I stitch it. Why don't you take it easy, Rambo? Let me do it, before you make it worse. He grabs fresh towels from the counter and tosses one to Sam to hold against the wound while Dean slings his duffel onto the bed next to him. Front pocket, Sam points out. The suture kit. Dean sets out the needle, thread, and the disinfectant supplies in a line on the other bed. Going back inside, he finds a pair of scissors. You mind losing half that shirt? Pretty much ruined anyway, Sam gives his blessing. Dean holds the cloth away from his body and cuts as straight a line as possible around the torso, exposing both the slope of Sam's lower back where it tapers and the hard ridges of his stomach when it's done. Shifting gears back to his more respectable brain, he aids Sam in carefully easing his arm above his head, giving Dean room to work. With a copious amount of rubbing alcohol, Dean cleans out the wound stretching down Sam's flank, dabbing at each inch until he's pinkened an entire bag of cotton balls with the excess blood.
He works, swift and efficient, moving on to the threading without a hitch, pulling the separated skin together in neat and undeniably practiced zigzagged patterns. Another hidden talent, specialized, and offering nothing but maddening glimpses into the sort of person that needs to know it. Someone like Sam, and apparently, someone like Dean. All in all, it doesn't take more than half an hour before he's applying the final touches, having Sam raise his arm and test the integrity of the stitches.
"That's nice work," Sam compliments. "Does Nurse Dean ring any bells?"
Dean presses harder than necessary at the wound for that, but Sam doesn't flinch.
"If I were a nurse, I'd be used to not getting straight answers from shady-ass people. Coming back to an empty hotel room with a gaping hole in your side is what, an occupational hazard?"
Looking down, Dean realizes he still has his hands planted on Sam's thighs for leverage, putting him face level with the planes of his abs, inches above the bunched denim at his crotch. He stands up, feeling like an idiot, an increasingly common occurrence.
"Been meaning to tell you that there's somebody I could take you to."
Artless subject change.
"Family friend. He might have something to help with your screw loose, this homeopathic shit that's supposed to work," he finishes vaguely.
Dean puts space between them, going to sit on the corner of his own bed.
"I appreciate the offer, but I figured I'd give it a few days, see if it's just temporary, before I do anything drastic. Thought I'd put it out there. Who knows what you'll think about what's been happening when you get your memories back, right?"
Strong possibility of that being the most forced statement Dean's heard him utter.
There's that flare of growing anger, breaking the surface. "All right, if I'm reading it wrong and you're not into this, fine. But this for my own protection bullshit? I lost some memories. I'm not a 15-year-old girl. You don't need to protect some blushing virginity of mine that doesn't exist."
Sam opens his mouth to make the requisite denial, and Dean wishes, just once, he'd get pissed. He'd roar and break out of the muted existence he's buried himself in. And wishes do come true, because instead of a lie, he gets,
"You don't even know what you're asking for, and if you did, you'd know I can't give it to you, Dean. Not any of it. I am literally incapable of caring about you, all right? And the rest?"
He shakes his head. "I know what he would say."
"Who?"
Dean throws his hands up. Sam shuts down, but Dean moves over to him, looming over him for once.
"Not everything falls through the cracks. You said it." "Doesn't apply here."
"Then who are you talking about?"
Silence.
"Like I said," Dean spits, "in the end, it may not be me, and I can make my peace with that." He stumbles slightly over the lie.
"But some part of you, some part you wish you could kill, beat out of you, it gives a damn about someone, and nothing you think or say or do is going to change that."
He thinks Sam might finally snap and take that swing at him, but it's so much farther than that now. Faster than he can register at first, Sam jerks him forward, almost tripping him on the bed and forcing him to bracket each knee around Sam's legs. Practically sitting in his lap, pressed hard enough against Sam to feel his cock straining against his jeans, against Dean's.
"I'm not afraid of anything." Sam's eyes bore into him. "Not anymore."
He effortlessly hefts Dean's hips up and forward, pressing their cocks together harder, probably trying his stitches in the process if Dean were in the realm to care.
"Take it out," he breathes into Dean's ear before biting down on his neck,
lapping over the indentation before raking his teeth over it and making it sting again. Dean hisses and writhes in his lap, operating on base instinct, the need to fuck. He's stymied by the layers of denim, command almost melting in his mind before he saves it from dissolving, promptly gets his hands to ripping at Sam's top button. His cock is fat and flushed when he frees it, growing harder still as Dean starts to move, ride his hand up and down when he can reach. It wouldn't be like this with anyone else. Safety in the danger, reckless, and the only thing that makes sense. Sam huffs out a breath against his neck when Dean experimentally runs his fingertips over the sticky head, wanting every part of this, wanting to know what it takes to make Sam come apart, how to be the one that gets to see it again and again. Groaning, he reluctantly lets go of Sam's cock to jerk the buttons of his own jeans open. There's so much heat when he jacks their cocks at the same time. Slick and loud, even above their harsh breathing. Even better when Sam bats his hand away, taking over with those fucking paws, cupping them together easier, wringing at the heads and covering them both in each other's shiny pre-cum. Thought about this for so long. Gonna be in you one day, Dean. The backseat of the Impala. He thinks out loud, grinning against Dean's throat. Ass up in the air, and you're gonna take it all for me, aren't you? And there'll be time for it, all of it, one day. But now, just want to come with you, Sammy. He moans, mindless and close. It does Sam in, makes him dig his blunt nails into Dean's sides as he splatters cum all over his stomach and jeans where they're pressed so tightly together. The warm pulse of it against his skin, and Sam's slowing but long fluid strokes on his cock pull him along with him, painting Sam in turn. Everything he doesn't remember, the invisible weight on his back, it crumbles around the moment, and Sam, finally, looks at him in surprise. There's an empty side of the bed when Dean awakes, and maybe it was wishful thinking to assume Sam would bunk with him like a lovelorn teenager, but the last time he pulled one of his vanishing acts, he came home with a chunk missing, one that had only begun to heal. Cursing him, Dean rolls out of bed to check the clock. After 7. It hadn't been dark for long, which meant Sam must have been waiting to slip out under the cover of darkness. Once Dean had passed out, spent, lying in the wet spots on the bed, and unlikely to be conscious enough to stop him from going. No conceivable way of knowing where Sam is or how to find him. Just the yawning knowledge that this time he might come back with more than a patchable tear on his side, if he made it back at all. God damn it, Sam, he voices again, limited options running double time through his mind. The woes of one invisible man hunting another. But wait, there was someone in the area that knew Sam. He's scrambling for his clothes before he can consider the myriad of ways this is a monumentally stupid idea, made even more impressive by the fact that he's going it alone. Tracking down Sam, not knowing what the hell he's involved in, is one thing. But going around and requesting favors from unbalanced waitresses that have tried to kill you? Well, nothing about he and Sam is smart, is it? And he's not losing him now. Pulling his boots on, he lets his gut lead the way, and asks whomever out there pays attention to the lost wretched things like them, that he makes it back with Sam in one piece. 10 minutes and a jog bring him to the door of the bar. He doesn't stop, barrels his way through the door, wild-eyed and perspiring. A female bartender notes his approach with raised eyebrows, and Dean presses on. There's a waitress. Long blonde hair. Pale. I need to talk to her. He resists adding a, now, and alienating the girl, casually swiping a rag over a mug as she nosily eyes him up and down. The unhurried pace of her movements only ratchets up his urgency. Rebecca? She's not scheduled tonight, sorry. Dean exhales loudly. Do you know of any way I can reach her? Please, it's an emergency. She chews on it for another excruciating moment. Oh yeah, there's a party at Kappa Beta Phi tonight. Supposed to be a pretty big rager, for those of us not stuck schlepping for peanuts instead. Dean practically begs her with his eyes. It's the 400 block on Clayton, about 4 or 5 miles from here. She relinquishes. You won't miss it. Finally obtaining a straight answer, he turns to go, but she halts him one last time. I wouldn't get on her bad side if I were you. I'll keep it in mind, Dean blows off. Too late anyway, and if she's between him and Sam, then there is no issue. She'll give him what he wants, or he'll get it, one way or another. The things he's willing to do. Clearing his head and catching his breath in the corner, he pulls out Sam's laptop, utilizing the bar's Wi-Fi to pull up the directions. Hoofing it here was less than 0.5 mile. By the time he got to the frat house on foot, toting a laptop, he'll have lost too much time. He pulls up a search engine to get the details of the local bus system when something sparks his attention through the nearby window. A young couple exits a pricey black sedan, heading for the entrance and fondling each other so clumsily that this can't be the first place they've hit up for booze tonight. He shakes his head and looks back down to the bus information before it registers. They didn't lock their car. Easing the laptop shut, he tucks it under his arm, inconspicuously passing the couple in question as he heads to the parking lot. It's a nagging at the back of his head. Has him scan the area and quietly open the driver door, sliding in and slouching down in the seat. A nail file in the middle console serves him well as he pulls out the ignition, hacking at the wires with the dull edge until the two he needs are free. The sparks burn as he touches the ends together, succeeding in starting the car on the second try. The engine is a total contrast to the recognizable rumble of the Impala, running smooth and nearly inaudible. Mass-produced junk for the rich. No personality, he thinks. He takes her to the exit, joining the light traffic without a hitch, and he's on his way. At the first stoplight, he grips the wheel, tense, more than Sam's whereabouts battling for dominance in his mind. The familiarity with the gun, the emergency first aid competency, and now the hot wiring. Doesn't take a memory to connect the dots now. It's a criminal skill set he's been drawing on, one that matches Sam's. Sam, who just so happened to pick him up off the road and take an interest in him, who packs a weapon and disappears at night. They knew each other. Whatever Sam is deep in, Dean had to have been too. The whole time, Sam has kept it from him. For his own good. It touches off something buried, something raw. Dean hates that fucking phrase. He doesn't know exactly what they are, or what they were. But after he finds Sam, once he's safe, one thing's for sure. Dean's kicking the ever-living shit out of him. It's early, which means the party still has some semblance of order and pretense of class, first guests being sized up at the door before they're granted entrance. In a few hours, the members of the house will be too loaded or too far into the night's conquests to notice one side of the building spontaneously falling down. Lying his ass off about being a brother from the class of 2000 gets Dean in the door without much hassle. Some moronic, hastily fabricated chatter about the way they did it in his day. The over-regulated, over-PC state of the governing board. He's fairly certain he's not the college type, but if by some chance he is, he hopes to God it didn't include this. The doorman, a pledge, doesn't recall laying eyes on the waitress when questioned, and then bribed, so Dean makes his way further inside. Weaving through the crowd, luckily not too dense yet, he surveys the room. With the distinctive color of her hair, there's no way he's missing her if she's here. Checking the clock on his way out of and back into the main hall, he wastes 10 fruitless minutes searching the ground floor, scouring the kitchen and the library, half the damn board of a game of Clue. The upstairs is roped off, mostly reserved for hookups that'll pick up in frequency as the night wears on. Little reason for the early comers to have migrated there yet. Frustrated by his lack of progress, he heads to the balcony, where a few more people have congregated. Silver-haired psychotics, unfortunately, not among them. The view the balcony provides is of a wooded area, darkened path leading into the trees. Perfect way for drunken idiots to end up mauled by wild animals, he lapses into Sam's line of thinking, rubbing his forehead in consternation. The wind whips through the trees as he stares, producing something akin to the mournful wail of a woman. But that doesn't account for the ivory light that momentarily illuminates their tall shapes against the inky sky. He moves closer to the edge, not discounting a trick of the light, some aspect of the party being set up away from the house. It shines once more, brilliant and dazzling, this time revealing a figure in its midst, moving deeper into the woods, wailing. Dean takes the stairs down two at a time, until he's standing at the foot of the path. The light is receding fast as he chases after, nearing the entrance to the woods. He gives one last indecisive glance to the frat house, but this, it's calling to him. Course decided, he dives in, pushing branches and bramble out of his way in search of the fleeting figure in white. A root causes him to stumble, but he dusts himself off and doggedly continues the pursuit to where it gets brighter up ahead. There's a clearing, and as he approaches, he slows his gait, not wanting to frighten the figure from where it stands. Near the trees, gazing at the stars, lighting the ring of the clearing into a gleaming jewel from afar. Cautiously, he moves aside a branch, coming closer, It's almost blinding at this proximity, emanating a warmth now that Dean is near enough to let it coast over his skin. He blinks as the figure turns to him, shielding his eyes as the shape is lost amongst the light. "Who are you?" "I'm the creature that promised you an end to what I started, Dean Winchester." That voice. The light dims until Dean can see. The warmth disappears. The waitress. "You!" There's no chance to process what's unfolding before his eyes, when even that form, the beautiful but deadly young girl, begins to shift and rearrange itself, bones protruding, skin bulging in patches to create yet another visage. It's a twisted reversal of the glory that drew him here, trap too enticing and alluring to pass by, now devolving before his eyes into something sinister that knows more of him than he knows of himself. With a sickening squelch, the waitress's body breaks and cracks until only the withered skeletal body of an old woman remains in its place. Dean backs away as she steps purposefully toward him. "What the hell are you?"
"What's the matter, Dean? Don't recognize me?"
"Can you blame me?" he bluffs, eyes searching the ground for something, anything to defend himself. "Single white female one minute, stock hag the next."
"You kept your sense of humor," she rasps, edging him against a tree, nowhere to run, putrid breath filling his nostrils.
"I'll enjoy the chance to savor it this time." Touching a finger to Dean's stomach, she indifferently drags a razor-sharp nail across it, blood welling to the surface in her wake. He inhales sharply, swallows down a yell of pain, won't give her the satisfaction.
"The thing about life force, what's good for it is terrible for souls. And a soul in as pitiable shape as yours," she tisks. "But all the things you've done and seen will sustain me for decades. When I got a taste of you before, I knew I had to have you." Her gnarled hand rests against his cheek, and Dean is jerked forward by an invisible force, limbs outstretched, but his back fixed against the tree. The air itself isn't enough, going thin and useless. He's fading, drain on his being, far more powerful than what she did to him as the waitress at the bar. Gasping, his lips part on reflex, as if he were about to be sick. A wispy tendril emerges from his throat, pulled taut, and as she maintains her hold, it thickens into a mist, flows forth smoother and more rapid. "My sister, on the other hand, will have to be satisfied with just killing Sam."
Dean attempts to lash out at her for letting his name roll off her rotted tongue so flippant. But she plants her hand on his stomach, rendering him limp and doubling the rate of extraction.
"Life force without a soul. Well, it doesn't taste right, Dean. Oh, how she'll pout tonight. You know how it is with younger siblings. Or you did."
His eyes roll upward in vain, only part of him unrestrained as the rest is taken. Eyes glinting with mirth, she cocks her head toward him, the ant under a magnifying glass.
"Goodbye."
That deceptively frail form seizes suddenly, look of shock frozen on the hag's face. The link holding him shatters, and Dean clambers out of the line of fire as fast as his punished body will carry him. A dagger penetrates her heart, virtually holding her aloft, tattered shoes hovering above the ground. Sam stands over from behind, twisting the blade with a slow, deliberate rotation of his wrist.
"Told you I'd make you pay for laying your hands on him," Sam whispers into her waxen ear, before letting her crumple inelegantly to the forest floor.
The light flashes in one intense parting burst and then dies as Sam steps around her, already forgotten. He goes to Dean, crouching in front of him and turning Dean's face side to side by the chin, inspecting. Expression easing when Dean glares up at him.
"You couldn't sleep for a few more hours?"
An insult, followed by a round of, "I want some goddamn answers," dies on Dean's lips. Coming up fast, gliding above the ground, Dean spies the Banshee's sister, grotesque face distorted in rage.
"Sam!"
A piercing shriek forces Dean to clamp the heels of his hands against his ears in preservation, but she has Sam pinned to the ground, getting the full blast as he tries to fend off her shredding claws, swiping in rage inches above his vulnerable throat.
a bloody, painful death on either front, and Dean with a first-hand view unless he does something. The bone-deep urge to rip her apart for touching what's his spurs him on toward the dagger, knocked from Sam's hand. Though it's like fighting through molasses, compelling his muscles to move, to keep going when every last one wants to give out, overloaded and shot. He pushes off the nearest tree and uses the momentum to rise. Barely audible above the screeching, Sam is bellowing his name, eyes instinctively wrenched shut from the assault on his hearing, like it'll lessen the agony. A trickle of blood runs from one of his ears in warning. Dean is mere feet from the blade. She sees this as he does. He breaks into a mad dash, letting his hands fall free from his ears. Keeping Sam in place with her voice, she whirls around, stopping Dean in his tracks with a wave of her hand that has the tattoo on his chest searing bright and fresh, like it's being burned into his flesh anew. He clutches at it, kneeling in the dirt, still attempting with everything he has to inch himself to the knife under dual assault. The distraction proves ample enough opportunity for Sam to kick her legs out from under her, briefly silencing her deafening shriek. "Dean, the heart!" he yells. And Dean is on his feet, gritting his teeth against the fire still burning in his chest. The dagger is heavy in his grip, immaculate design carved into the handle. She bucks like a wounded animal, trying to dislodge Sam as Dean approaches. Raising the knife above his head, he brings it down as Sam rolls out of the way, puncturing her heart on the first thrust. Both back away, ready to move in again, together, but the telltale light show begins, shrunken eyes illuminating and flickering out. The hateful satisfaction on Sam's face fades when he glimpses Dean, stock still and blank. "What's wrong?" The knife slips from Dean's hand and into the dirt, trailing back to the tattoo, hot to the touch even through his clothes. There's an oncoming wall of sound, reverberating inside his head. Not the banshee, no. It's someone speaking. Overlapping, clashing voices turn to bedlam. He peers at Sam, his image wavering and receding as Dean's vision swims, and his head is suddenly nigh to bursting.
"I'm a collector. I work with my brother off and on. Not the guy he's looking for now.
It's a criminal skill set he's been drawing on, one that matches Sam's.
And the rest? I know what he would say. You know how it is with younger siblings. Or, you did. Some part you wish you could kill, beat out of you. It gives a damn about someone."
Dean opens his eyes. There's a weight on him, Sam's hands soothing at his sides. He shakes them off violently, skin crawling as he retreats into the nearest surface he can keep his back to. With a small shake of his head, Sam gazes at him in confusion, waiting for an answer to a question he asked someone else. If he were Sam, the real thing, he would have known by now. Just by looking into Dean's eyes and reading the virulent revulsion and disgust splashed across the front pages, his eyes narrow when it clicks.
"Dean?"
Hearing his name out of that thing's mouth is the last fracture in the dam. Rearing back and clocking the hell out of its jaw, he tackles him to the ground, bodies of the banshees surrounding them. Dean drives his fist at Sam's face again and again, wanting it to fight back so Dean can hurt it more, the only way it's capable of being broken.
"What are you?"
He keeps screaming as it shields itself from the worst of the assault, but doesn't throw a punch, not a fucking one. The same way it laid there after Veritas. Insidious thing getting under Dean's skin, and making him think. Cracking his sore knuckles, he gets up, putting the span of the clearing between them, clenching and unclenching his fist rhythmically as he paces. Anything to dispel this endless wellspring of rage that only has the one other place to go. Sam, it, rests on one knee, spits a mouthful of blood onto the dirt before it rises, wiping its stained lips. "For what it's worth," Dean closes his eyes as it speaks, exhaling loudly. "I was going to go to Bobby's to get your memories back after I took care of the banshees." It throws its hands up, gazing at Dean, though he pointedly refuses to engage it right now. I thought I was doing you a favor." Dean's head snaps up, unbidden.
"A favor?"
Running a hand over his mouth, he stares, incredulous.
"What, you thought if you made me into some pod person, we'd go skipping through the fields, slaughtering puppies and fucking without the whole brothers thing in the way?"
He stops, dawning horror entering his mind.
Did you plan this?
Of course not.
And I'm supposed to believe you.
Believe what you want. I didn't let the Banshee do anything to you, and I didn't even know until the next day what surviving one would do to you. The books all said it would wear off quick, and Bobby confirmed it. When I saw you coming around, I decided to drop you off and circle back to pick you up like I found you there. Thought it was the more humane option than trying to cram 30+ years of unbelievable events back into your head myself.
I thought it was what you would have done, he finishes.
Dean casts his eyes skyward, shoulders shaking with barely contained fury in the thin guise of laughter.
What I would have done?
All that stuff you were talking about a soul being misery. I listened, and I realized you were right. That's how it was for me, and this was the closest thing for you.
That it would be easier for a while, that you deserved a break, wasn't it?
Don't pretend that you give a damn about me, don't you dare. You're hardwired to care about what happens to one person and one person alone. See, I told you that it made you the last person that needed to be calling any shots, but then you take it upon yourself to do this?
He spreads his arms wide, and it's just the two of them, but the mountain of fucked up just keeps growing taller.
You think you're happy like this? All this makes sense to you. What the fuck are you going to think about all of it when you get your soul back, huh? About what a great idea crossing so many lines with me was.
Sam blinks in thought, as infuriatingly unaffected as he always was when Dean wasn't himself.
Probably the same thing that I've always thought about it. That I know it's wrong, but I want it anyway.
He levels Dean with wide, apologetic, lying eyes, and Dean can't stay and look at its face anymore. What it does with Sam's face. It can't know what Sam thinks about him, the two of them. It doesn't know how. It lies as easy as breathing.
It wasn't real, Dean declares, voice low. None of it. Not you.
He purses his lips into a drawn line.
This is how you want to be for the rest of your life. Have fun.
Setting off in the direction he senses the road, and thus the Impala. He's gone.
Bobby, stay out of it.
He slams the trunk lid down in the parking lot of a Shell station outside Lincoln.
You got no idea what he did this time. None.
Well, seeing as the two of you unofficially deemed me your couples counselor. Dean blanches at the implication, despite Bobby having no way of knowing.
I figure you got to hear some things you don't want to when you call. He ain't exactly in his right mind. You of all people have to recognize that.
He's not Sam. Period.
It's that simple, is it?
Dean adjusts the phone in his grip, watching the crawl of I-80 East in the distance. Long way to go to Omaha and beyond on that road. Road that'll take him closer to Battle Creek. Home.
It is from where I'm standing.
Bobby sighs.
Where is he?
Don't know. But he can take care of himself. Not my problem anymore.
Son, call me when you get your head screwed on straight. I got better things to do than listen to this.
Dean scoffs lightly as the call abruptly disconnects. Screwed is what his head's been for the past week and a half. Doesn't matter. Bobby's not his keeper, and Dean isn't Sam's. Sam is gone. Scrolling through his phone, he stops at Lisa's number. Hasn't told her yet that he's coming. Hasn't quite gotten to the point where he'd know what to say. He'll call. Lot of road left in between to call. During the years, Sam was content in his deceptively secure haven at Stanford, and Dad increasingly took solo jobs, making progress in finding the thing that killed Mom, but keeping Dean in the dark. He ate a lot of meals alone. This deafening silence in the corner booth of the diner, or parked under the shade of the nearest courtesy tree. No arguing to be had with Sam. No common strategy to be reviewed with Dad. Almost nothing of the things that kept him tethered to the world when his white-knuckled grip was perilously close to slipping. 6 years on, and one thing is abundantly clear. He hates it now as much as he did then. He balls up half of his second burger and chucks it out the window, appetite dwindling. His stomach won't settle as he approaches the Michigan state line, mind and body firing off-kilter the whole trip because Dean made the stupid mistake of allowing himself to get used to having Sam. Because the last 2 weeks, despite the violation and the overwhelming risk of it all, was the closest thing he's had to his brother in over a year, and deep down, he knows it's why he didn't fight it. Everything that didn't add up. In his gut, he can't ever look and not see part of Sam. Swallowing around the lump in his throat,
He pulls back onto the loop that'll take him to the highway. Less than 3 hours to Lisa's, if he shoots straight through. He doesn't plan on stopping again. Dean idles in the driveway for a few minutes before killing the engine. They're not home, and he's thankful for the opportunity to collect himself. Doesn't want to leave any more excess baggage on their doorstep. Running out of room at this point. The neighborhood isn't that different from the old one in Cicero. Manicured lawns and minivans, the Impala still sticking out like a sore thumb. No personality, he recalls, letting out a small chuckle despite himself. Not built for civilian life, his baby. Taking a breath to steel himself, he gets out of the car, feeling exposed where others find security. He lived the life, worked the job, ran the errands, but it was for the family, because his is gone. Letting his hand trail along the Impala's side, he goes to the trunk to unload the couple of emergency bags they always kept stashed there. Some clothes and blankets to keep from freezing if they had to sleep in the car. Basic protection like pistols, salt, and iron, along with miscellaneous items like first aid and backup cell phones. Sam used to be the one to keep it organized, hefting the one he thinks he'll need quick access to until he can stock the house to the side. He counts an odd number, an extra bag. Unzipping the main portion, he inspects the contents. Sam's clothes, wrinkled like they'd been recently used. It's one of his day-to-day bags. Must have brought it with him when he went after the Banshees. Biting down on the initial urge to toss it, he realizes there's no point in not salvaging what he can. He touches the clothing as minimally as possible, ignoring thoughts of how Sam felt on him, swirling around his head and not making him as sick as they should be by all rights. His hand brushes a hard item near the bottom. Almost thought he imagined it, the cushioning of the T-shirt deliberately wrapped around it belying its presence there. Unraveling the fabric, he nearly drops it when it falls into his hand. His amulet. No worse for wear than the dark times he dropped it in the trash, unable to see beyond the end of the day, and figuring it didn't matter anyway. Nothing did, because he was alone. But he wasn't. Sam showed him that. His Sam took it out of the trash because he already knew, just had to knock the sense back into Dean's head. Carried it with him until the day he gave up everything for them all. And the thing Dean had been calling a shell with his face kept it close ever since, with no reason to, whatsoever. Instinct. Dean closes it in a fist he pounds against the roof of the car. He spreads his throbbing fingers against the warm metal. How is he supposed to deal with this? What the hell is he supposed to do? Whatever he may feel for Dean, this part of Sam isn't his brother. But he can't bury his head on this one. Can't deny that there's something of his brother left. Cracks like this, in the soulless facade, when something unexplainable but for burgeoning sincerity boils to the surface. Without a soul, without memories, somehow it always comes down to each other. Another thing about his gut. It knew he never should have come here. Nagged at him from the moment he left Sam stranded in Boulder. He's glad Lisa and Ben didn't see him. Glad this one time he doesn't have to darken their doorstep. They're a family, and they have each other to turn to. But Dean, he has to take care of his own. It's a local diner they've blown through before. Fresh pies and ultra-thick millionaire milkshake specialties advertised on the glass. Sam is there, as promised, attention fixed out the window as he sips coffee, portions of food left neglected on the table. It occurs to Dean that little about Sam may be functioning normally on a physical level. Not just the sleep, but his appetite, his tolerance for alcohol, and Dean would say his libido, but it took two to make that bed and lie in it. Truth be told, he didn't want to know. Too busy taking it out on Sam for wearing that face, focusing on what was lost instead of what was left, and going all in to get back the rest. Sam burning the way Dean burned. All of it's going to change. Sam has to have seen him, but allows Dean to approach on his own terms. When he finally sits down, Sam doesn't react, doesn't engage him at all, and whether it's an attempt at consideration or not, Dean's back to not knowing. In the meantime, he pulls Sam's plate over and takes a bite out of a piece of bacon. He has his appetite back, at least. Figures for him, for them, it's a step in the right direction. How'd you find me? Placing his now empty cup on the table,
He pushes over the rest of his uneaten breakfast and signals the waitress for more coffee.
Bobby, Dean admits through the side of his mouth, chewing. I didn't get laid.
That random admission stops Dean's jaw from working for a minute.
After you took off. Feel the loss and all, right?
Sam looks to him for approval, and he's trying, so Dean thinks the least he could do is the same.
That's awesome, Sam. I wanted you anyway. It's better with you.
He finishes, not nearly as unaware as he projects.
Not with this,
when he watches the heat creep up Dean's neck, entirely too happy with himself. Dean wasn't exactly planning on having this conversation over half of breakfast. While they're on the subject, however, he asks, straightforward.
What you said about Sam, the other part of Sam, and what he thought.
That a lie?
What reason do I have to lie about it?
He does have a point, but...
I can't.
Dean clears his throat awkwardly.
Not until you're... all of you, again.
Weighing it, Sam's brow furrows.
So should I wait for you? Is that how it works?
I don't know. Could you?
Can I jerk off with you in the room?
You probably will anyway, won't you?
Probably, Sam concedes, cheerfully getting his refill from a waitress who lingers around their table a little too long, eavesdropping.
Or possibly another homicidal creature. Guess they'll have to wait and see come nightfall.
Dean shakes his head.
Not entirely shocking that even with very special episode amnesia, I still wanted to kill you half the time.
And the other half?
Drink your damn coffee, he orders without bite. Sam smirks into his cup, going back to the window.
You brought the car?
Yeah.
That's good, 'cause I'm pretty sure there's an APB out on the Volvo I stole.
Pretty sure?
Well, I knocked out a cop in Denver that was running the plates, so...
He shrugs.
Dean gapes at him, lowering his voice in case their company is still nearby.
Knocked out not meaning a euphemism for dead, right?
I dragged him to the toilet. He was still breathing.
These are the things that Dean will have to keep in check until they get his soul back. But Sam, to his credit, does seem to be learning.
I knew if you were there, you'd tell me not to kill him. That's how I made the decision, he explains.
It's almost the demented equivalent of a kid showing off a drawing to be put on the fridge.
Dean manages a weak smile. Still a ways to go with this. He starts, We're going to get your soul back.
I know.
But I think maybe there's more of him to you than either of us bargained for.
He picks up a menu, and Sam peers at him owlishly, turning over the words in ways that Dean will probably never fully comprehend. But some things stay the same. Sam's always looked to him, and he's not going to let him down. Any part of him. They all belong in the same place. He'll slip the amulet back in his bag tonight.
If you enjoyed this story, please leave feedback for the author at lotrabc.livejournal.com.